It's the Underpod with your host, Quentin Copeland.
Hello and welcome in to the inaugural episode of the Underpod, where we are always Team David in the Battle of David and Goliath. I'm your host, Quentin Copeland, and over the lifespan of this show, I'm going to be talking about some of my personal favorite underdog stories from the world of sports, and even may take a request or two, depending on how much I enjoy the request. These stories I'm going to tell are not necessarily the ones that have gotten the Hollywood treatment. Most everybody knows the story of the Miracle on Ice and things of that nature. Here on this show, I'm trying to focus on the upsets and the underdogs that haven't had their story told as often as some of the great ones, or ones that were just too recent to have gotten the Hollywood treatment yet. Our topic today is a great example of one of those stories. Today we are talking about Leicester City and their infamous, unbelievable run to the Premier League title in the 2015-16 season. The Foxes, as is their team name, as referred to by the fans, were labeled in that one particular season the Unbelievables, a playoff of Arsene Wenger's Invincibles with Arsenal back in the day. This was a Leicester team managed by Claudio Ranieri, who has since moved on. They won the league with 81 points and never fell below sixth place. In fact, they were in first place from match week 22 all the way until the end of the season, never ceding first place to Tottenham Hotspur, who were hot on their heels until the very last match week of the season. At the beginning of the season, Leicester had 5,000-1 title odds, some of the longest odds of any title winner in any sport ever. They had only been promoted to the Premier League 2 years prior to lifting the trophy, and their starting lineup cost around $29 million, which is dirt cheap compared to the television money squads of the big boys that tend to finish in the top six of the Premier League. Their only three losses that year were two to Arsenal, who eventually finished second behind them, and one away at Liverpool at Anfield, which is an incredibly hard place to play, so no shame in taking a loss there. Having laid out the season Leicester had in 2015-16 on paper, I think it's a good time to introduce my guest. He is a former classmate of mine and currently writes for New York City FC in the MLS, who just made their first appearance in the MLS Cup Final this past weekend. He writes for the Queen's Ledger. His name is Noah Zimmerman, Chelsea fan. Noah, y'all had a tough one this weekend against West Ham with that fullback's cross going in and winning it at the London Stadium at the end there.
Chelsea definitely took a tough one, but I don't know. They have like six hurt guys right now.
And Pulisic's just coming back now.
Yeah, he still doesn't really look like ready.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something's off about that.
He's streaky. He's still streaky. So,
yeah, definitely.
So thank you for giving us some of your time. We are talking today about the Unbelievables, the 2015-16 Leicester City team, who many refer to as the biggest underdog in history.
Maybe Sam's Miracle on Ice back at Lake Placid. That year was pretty unremarkable for both of us.
Yeah.
I think we were 7th and 10th, respectively. It was weird. In the top of the table was Leicester, Arsenal, Tottenham.
Yeah, really, really weird. Definitely haven't seen a title like that. It's impossible to really compare that to any other title just because of a number of things. But especially as a Chelsea fan, like having such a bad year really kind of opened it up to like, I was rooting for Leicester pretty much since like November. Like I saw the start Chelsea had. I was pulling for them, same colors, not a rival. And just a lot of the players were likable guys Like they had a lot of young talent, a lot of source talent that was really coming together in a really cool way. So it was just easy to root for them. And I think that kind of helped build narratives behind, like, they have the energy, they have the fan support behind them. I mean, I was rooting really hard the last, like, up to the last match weeks, especially when Chelsea was playing Tottenham with the season on the line for Spurs. It didn't mean anything for Chelsea, but Spurs lost on that goal. They lost the title race, and that itself was great. And like the video of all the Leicester guys watching the Chelsea Spurs game was just great to see.
Yeah, wasn't it? It was Eden Hazard right at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, beautiful strike, top corner. Bring him home. He needs to come home.
Bring him home and get him on a diet plan.
I don't even know if he's completed a full season. That's really sad to see.
So as far as players go, I mean, obviously the big four or five was Vardy, Mahrez, Schmeichel, Kante. And if you want to throw a defender in there, you've got like Wes Morgan, because he was in the team of the season that year. What can you say to like their performances? Well, first off, none of those guys have except maybe Wes Morgan, although he was in the end of his career, as opposed to the rest of those guys kind of being on the younger side, like all of them kind of proved it wasn't a fluke. So first off, like, what can you say about the money ball that they kind of pulled, with every player at their inception at the club being worth only around $2 million apiece? I think they got Vardy from the seventh division. They got Kante from I think it was France, for like $5 million, and they got Mahrez from Le Havre as like a kid.
Yeah.
So like, what can you say about that? And I mean, then you can feel free to zero in on Kante particularly, because you're probably far more familiar with him being the tank that runs the engine next to Jorginho for Chelsea.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said about, like, obviously it's easy to look at the players who are on Leicester's title winning season and call them like great players, because like that's where a lot of them came to fame and it propelled a lot of their careers forward. It's really cool seeing particularly how Vardy's career has continued, because he's kept up that, not quite that crazy level that he was playing at, but he's still like a superstar on the pitch. He's still scoring a lot of goals each year. He was in the Golden Boot race pretty recently, like up until the very end. It's just really cool to see, even if Leicester haven't really that close to challenging. Then you also have, like, obviously Kante has proven that he's one of the best midfielders in the world, if not the best. You see what he did for Chelsea, you see what he does for France, and you see what he did for Leicester. And it's not like he wasn't always doing that. Like, he's always been that workhorse. I think just his ability to put that into a title-winning season really, like, turned heads to what he was doing, made him, like, a target. And, like, there's just so many different players that went in different directions. And I think Leicester having them all like together so early on was a little bit of luck in just having them all at the perfect time, and a little bit of just smart moves paying off, making the right investments and players who were bringing a lot of heart to the club.
How much credit do you give to Ranieri?
I give a ton of credit. Yeah. He's just a fantastic guy. I think like there's only a few times where you really see like the manager kind of mesh in perfectly with the crowd, with the players, with the media. I think Ranieri there was one of those moments. Kind of reminded me of like Antonio Conte at Chelsea.
Yeah.
Really seized the moment, really became that like legendary manager connected to everything. And like they won the title with him. That's just something that happens when everything clicks.
Yeah. As far as Vardy goes, would you say he's kind of in that Ronaldo group of don't, if he gets a shot on goal, there's a 95% chance it's going in? One of those, I remember a commentator one time going, he gets one chance, like legitimate chance every game, just because that's how good he is at getting into like attacking positions.
Yeah, I think there's definitely that level of striker where, like, you'll have your really talented strikers who are going to be a threat to score, but you're going to have like a completely different class of guys who are going to make sure they have that chance every single game, who really impose like their force on the pitch. Like just watching the recent MLS season, for me, like Tati Castellanos just won the Golden Boot.
Yeah.
Without him today, NYCFC had so little. Like they had no attacking presence without him.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to when he's on the pitch, he had 8 assists and 18 goals this past mm-hmm. year. And he just makes sure he gets those chances. That's something that Vardy definitely does. That's something that the best players in the game do. I do think it's unfair to call it like Ronaldo-esque.
Yeah.
That's a completely different level doing it in the Champions League.
True, exactly. Yeah.
But you really do have to give Vardy his credit. He really turned himself into like one of those household names, one of the most lethal guys in the attacking third.
Yeah, he broke Ruud van Nistelrooy's consecutive game scored in record at 11 that season too. That form was just unbelievable, the form of his life, and it's been a springboard ever since. As for Leicester as a team, they've maintained their success after the championship. They had a couple of ninth place finishes and retooled, and they finished fifth twice now and qualified for the Europa League both times. Actually, they're on to the round of 16 this year in the Europa League, having won their group.
There's a lot of questions to be asked of like what happens if they retain those players. And it really is kind of sad to see like they win one championship and it's impossible to retain all of those guys just because of the value that comes to them. Like, how do you say no to most of these transfers? How do you give the contracts that some of the guys are going to be asking for when the contracts expire? And it's really impressive that they were able to keep it up, that they did get back to the Champions League after that season. Even if they weren't really doing anything crazy in there, that's a difficult competition to succeed in. And it really is lucky to see Vardy continue there. I think it would have felt wrong seeing him do what he does in a different shirt. I think the soccer media would have gone crazy just running storylines of like, what if he stayed? Is this the wrong move? And it just would have brought too much chaos to his career. I think this was the best decision.
Also, I think the shithouse that is Jamie Vardy would have kind of turned against him had he gone anywhere else. But the fact that he stayed at Leicester, yeah. I mean, I just remember him a couple of years ago scoring against Wolves and going and like howling at the away section, just like doing all that. And that it really comes across as that same Jamie Vardy's having a party 2015-16. Oh, it's just, they're just Leicester running wild.
Yeah. And there's a lot to be said for like Leicester could be finishing 10th in the league and Vardy could still be scoring on your team and going crazy. And knowing that at the end of the day, he's Jamie Vardy. He's the guy who helped bring a title home to Leicester. Yeah. And like, he's got that going for him for the rest of his career.
Yeah. And so lastly, I just, in the grand scheme of underdog stories, just in your experience, in your time in sports, hearing stories about stuff, where do you hold that title in the pantheon of underdog stories?
There's a couple different levels to that. I could talk for hours about Leicester City winning the title. I think in a very personal level, it's like one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen, just given what the season is. Like, the Premier League is no joke. That is a grueling marathon against the best teams in the world. The top six, even when they're underperforming, are almost unbeatable. Like, it's hard to imagine a team that was playing in the championship, a team that was playing in the lower leagues, just suddenly sitting on top of the Prem. But can I talk to hours about anyone on the street about it? That's a little different. If you're not talking to another fan of the Prem, you kind of have to find analogies, find metaphors to kind of explain how meaningful the title was. And it just doesn't hit the same, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's a lot easier to pull out like crazy football miracles,
yeah,
or the miracle on ice, like you mentioned earlier, yeah, something that everyone really did see.
As far as the world stories, it's pretty much, I mean, at least in our time on this earth in soccer, it's pretty much Leicester. If you want to throw Lille in there last year, or Monaco when they had Mbappe and Tielemans and all them, or Greece at the Euros back in the day. Pretty much other than that, you're right. I mean, stateside, you don't get much gravity from that topic, just because even if you saw it, it may not have had that weight that other things.
However, I do feel as though that maybe that need for metaphors in order to not dumb it down, but dumb it down to an American, uneducated, not interested in soccer, those metaphors may be a testament to just how incredible it was. Thank you, Zim, for coming on here and talking to me about your boys in blue and the boys in blue that pulled off the impossible back in 2015-16. And all I can say is good luck to NYCFC against Portland this weekend after having clinched MLS Cup last weekend in Philadelphia amid all of the COVID controversy. Hopefully you have something good to write about. Now a word from our sponsor. Hey Boston, are you looking for a taste of the South without the travel? Big Faith's Barbecue is the hottest place in Boston right now, both literally and figuratively. Big Faith's rubs, marinades, and sauces range from mild to nuclear. Rumor has it George Bush has already allocated ungodly amounts of resources to expose the recipe for Big Faith's Big Boy Atomic Barbecue Sauce. Make sure you tell him you're an Underpod listener for a discounted price on Big Faith's signature meat. Big Faith's Barbecue at 465 Cambridge Street, the official sponsor of the Underpod and its very opinionated host, particularly on the topic of Southern food. Now, before we go, it's time for our first installment of a segment I like to call Best in Show. This is where we highlight a key moment or a key part of our underdog story. With Leicester, you can't tell the story of the team success without the individual revelations that were the star players that went on to further their careers and have that title-winning season in 2015-16 act as a springboard to greater things. First up is a name we've already mentioned plenty today. The success of Leicester is nothing without their talisman at the top, Jamie Vardy. That year, he had the most goals and assists in the Premier League with 30 and was second in the Golden Boot race with 24 goals, only behind Harry Kane's 25. He was bought for a non-league record of 1.6 mil from the 5th division, Fleetwood Town. Only 1 year prior, he was in the 7th division. In 2013, he almost quit after his first year at Fleetwood Town didn't go as planned. And then the very next season, he was second top scorer in the championship season, in which they won and earned promotion to the Premier League. As we mentioned before, he scored in 11 straight games in 15-16, breaking Van Nistelrooy's record. And he's the oldest player to win the Premier League Golden Boot at 33, which he did 2 years ago. The legend of Jamie Vardy is one that has not stopped growing. It was only made bigger and bigger ever since he exploded onto the scene in 2015-16. The other player I want to highlight is Vardy's attacking partner in crime who operated out on the wing. Riyad Mahrez from Algeria was a star that year, making the team of the season alongside center back Wes Morgan, center mid N'Golo Kanté, and striker Jamie Vardy. Mahrez joined Le Havre in 2010 in the second division of France, turning down offers from PSG and Marseille's youth setups. Mahrez had never heard of Leicester when he started garnering interest from them, but he presumed they were a rugby club at first before finding out otherwise eventually. He signed for Leicester for $450,000 a year. He later became the first Algerian to score a Premier League hat-trick versus Swansea City in a game they won 3-0. Interestingly enough, Mahrez's popularity in his homeland of Algeria led Leicester to have almost three times as many Facebook fans in Algeria than in the UK. At the end of the 2015-16 season, he was named the PFA Players Player of the Year. He was nominated for the Ballon d'Or the following year, finishing seventh. He helped the team make the quarterfinals of the Champions League for the first time, which they qualified for by winning the league in the year prior. He scored 4 goals and 2 assists in that campaign, stamping themselves in European football. Eventually, in 2019, he signed to Manchester City for nearly $80 million, which was obviously a huge loss for Leicester, but that massive price tag almost single-handedly allowed Leicester to retool and finish fifth twice since he's left. So there you have it. Jamie Vardy and Riyad Mahrez are your best in show for the 2015-16 Leicester City Unbelievables. That pretty much does it here today for the Underpod. Make sure you tune in next week when we interview Charles Steinberg, president and CEO of the Worcester Red Sox, as we talk about the incredible story of David Eckstein. If you've read his story, you know that he fits the bill for this show just perfect. That's all for now. Hey, I'm Quentin Copeland.